Saturday View on Midlands 103. With thanks to Lumcloon Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. Lumcloonenergy.com. Have your say. Call 0818 300 103. Text or WhatsApp your Saturday View to 083 3010 103.
And a very good morning. You are very welcome to Saturday View on Midlands 103 with me, Ronan Berry. Time for you to have your say about things that are happening across the Midlands and bringing you stories and updates on some interesting stories and everything else. I'm going to later in the show just revert back and just touch on some of the additional texts that we got in last week doing the full show about road safety. And I have to say thank you to everybody who texted in, because we got great ideas, there was great suggestions, and the one thing that I could take from it was everybody knows that something has to change in our roads. And for once, we weren't trying to lay the blame at various organisations or different bodies. People seem to be saying, look, we can take personal responsibility on this. And so much has happened during the week in terms of, you know, in the news as well. And unfortunately, the statistics keep continuing to rise. But later on, as well as looking at the statistics around that and looking at some of those texts, I'll be talking to a cyclist who will give their perspective what it's like being a cyclist out on our roads at present. Is it affecting people's participation in the sport? Are people genuinely afraid? Is there a fear? And I suppose, what are they seeing from a driver behaviour perspective that either concerns them or maybe encourages them? So again, looking forward to hearing your continued input on that subject. Of course, the weather is another thing that has really curtailed the cycling season, along with golf, along with sports, along with so much other things. We've recently spoke to lots of farmers who have been struggling. Hopefully, the last few days, few showers, dry overall. The ground does seem to be drying a little bit, and hopefully that'll bring a little bit more positivity and allow people to get on and get ahead with what they need to do. In the middle of the show today, I'm going to look at, and again, it's another recurring topic, is the traffic challenges in Mullingar Town. So one local councillor belongs to talk about that. They've raised this issue again with the municipal district and have asked for immediate action to be taken. And they're now saying that the businesses on the streets are reporting back that they're noting a decrease in footfall, that they think people are now choosing not to come into the town centre, not to come to certain shops because of access issues. Another councillor in Westmeath has also highlighted how Kinnegad, he believes, is becoming effectively a car park for Dublin Airport. Many people abandoning cars, leaving them in various public and private car parks around the town in order to get the bus up to Dublin. Can that be converted into a plan where an actual park and ride facility is developed? It sounds on the surface like it'd make a lot of sense. So let's find out more about that in about 15-20 minutes time. As always, you would have heard it at the start of the show. If you want to get involved today, the Lamb Brothers text and WhatsApp number 083 3010 103, or Nelly is out there on the phone to 0818 300 103. Always delighted to have your opinion on the show as well. It is hugely important, chance for you to get your views across on a Saturday morning. Now, but begin today, I'd like to introduce you to Seamus Riley. Seamus founded Critical Healthcare, a medical distribution company, in around 2000, along with his wife, Dr. Anne Cusick. And they grew it from a €0 business to about a €20 million business before selling it in 2021. They experienced all the pains and joys associated with building a business, you know, and I suppose particularly when, for them, it was a family business too. So balancing the business, balancing raising a family and everything else in between. Now, somehow within it, Seamus did find time to do skiing. And on a LinkedIn post recently, he described it as a real passion for him, that he loves skiing. But this is where the story takes a little bit of a twist, because what Seamus went on to say on that post last week was that many of you reading this may not be aware that 20 years ago I broke my back, which resulted in damaging his spinal cord. It left him with life-changing disability. He said living life with an incomplete spinal cord injury is challenging. While I've never shied away from talking to people about this, I've also not openly discussed it. Now, he had a reason for going out with this post as well, that he has a kind of a suggestion, or even a call to action, we might put it, around skiing and adaptive sports around the Midlands. But first, let's meet the man himself. Very good morning, Seamus.
Good morning, Ronan. How are you today?
And Seamus, I can confirm, is not wearing a jacket in the studio.
we tried to take it off Aidan, but he wouldn't let us
No, it will not come off. Aidan, look, he's scowling in at us through the window now as well. Aidan. Yeah, that's it. Poor Aidan and his jacket. He'll become famous anyway for that.
Famous, I know.
Seamus, you, I suppose, like that. And I know in your post you mentioned how life was busy, you know, growing a business, ultimately selling it as well. You spoke to many people, I guess, at networking meetings and in private circles about the accident you'd had. You've never gone public with it now. Before we get to why you want to bring it public, can you take us back to the accident, what happened and, I suppose, the impact it has had on you?
Yeah, I suppose it was 20 years ago, it was the 12th of February, 10:45 on a Sunday morning, and was just, again, out exercising the horse. I wanted to stop the horse. I forgot to tell the horse to stop, and I dismounted onto my butt, and that was it. It was as simple as that. I went, broke my back in my back in three places. It's fused together, and then part of the bone fell onto the spinal cord, and that left me then with an incomplete spinal cord injury, which I'm lucky to have got away with rather than a complete one. So the difference is people with complete spinal cord normally end up in wheelchairs with very limited ability to do anything there afterwards. So, yeah, I spent then roughly about 5.5 months in the rehab in Dunleary, learning how to walk. I was discharged on crutches, which was a feat in itself. I think I was one of the first people in maybe about 10 years who actually walked out of the hospital. So doggedness, determination or whatever helped me get through that. But I think it was down to the care I got in Tullamore at the time. It was just phenomenal. We had, you know, best nursing staff that we could ever have once I entered that hospital until when I left again. So I'm gratefully thankful to all the people who helped me in those first couple of hours.
Was it instant when, as soon as you fell, did you know straight away?
I knew, and the people there knew as well. One of the mothers was there, and she just knew from the spasms I was going through that it was a spinal shock I went into immediately. So the body did shut itself down to try and help prepare and limit the damage that was happening to me. As I said, luckily and again, going back to your conversation earlier on today, or where you're going later on, about road accidents. It was at a time when we brought in the first of the restrictions on, I think it was drink driving and awareness campaigns and all that. And the Mater Hospital is the only spinal unit in Ireland with 6 beds. And it's very rare that you can get straight in there. But because there had been so much awareness there, there was a lot less road accidents at that time. So for me, the passage through the hospital side to rehabilitation was very quick and very smooth. And that helped me in my recovery at the same time as well.
And of course, it was a challenging time in every respect, because critical healthcare as a business was quite young at that point.
We were 3 years old. I basically knew everything about the business. While Anne did work on the business, we had 2 daughters, and the business was 3 years old. We'd moved back from the UK. So we were establishing ourselves again in the Midlands. Anne was 3 months pregnant with Ellen, and we were actually in the process of moving. We had our facilities were in Tullamore, and we were moving to a new premises that we had bought in Kilbeggan. And this was all happening within the 2 to 3 weeks after my accident, you know, of this move as well. So, yes, it was a very difficult time for Anne at home by herself, because we didn't have a lot of family around, dealing with keeping the business going, because both of us were involved in it. So it was, we had no plan B of income. And at that stage, there was very little supports in the area or in Ireland as well. So, yeah, it was a very, very difficult time for her to adapt to these changes, to deal with me up there in the hospital. I had to obviously try and deal with the emotional side of and the physical side of what was happening to me. So, yes, it was a very difficult time. I suppose, you know, when you do get spinal cord injury, it is one of those, and it can be one of those disabilities that is not visible. You look at me today and you probably would not know there is something wrong with me. So I think we have to be careful about people who have issues that is not visible. And again, have greater awareness to, you know, that there are people out there who are struggling in different ways, and how we can actually maybe help them a little bit, and be a bit more courteous to people out there as well. So, yeah, coming out of hospital was a shock in its own way. You know, it was adapting to life for me, and Ellen was just born in the, I better get this right, in the June. And so, yes, it was a shock how to adapt to life afterwards. It was easy for me because I just threw myself into business. And it was, I suppose, that helped us again change where we wanted the direction of the business, because we had to do that for so many different reasons. But yeah, particularly the first couple of years, I had very limited ability to walk. I was on crutches for a long time. And what you could do then with a growing family, with a young family, on holidays, I have daily functions that I need to take care of, bowel, bladder, and they focus my mind on what I do with my day and how I plan my day, which is different for other people. And at the same time, you want to go on holidays, but, you know, you can't do the adventure ones because I can't get in and out. And do I sit in the car? Do I sit on the beach? And you want to have those kind of inclusive holidays that we can do something with. So we thought skiing was one way to do that, because it grounds everybody. Once you're on that chairlift and you get off it and you're on the top of a mountain, you all have to get down together. So it can be a lot of fun. So I suppose with my doggedness and bit of naivety, I thought, well, maybe we can go skiing together. So I think 3 years later after the operation or the accident, we went to a ski resort in France, and I set myself off. I left the four of them to do what they were going to do, and I was determined I could make this work. So threw myself down a mountain after 3 days and said enough's enough. So we cut things short and bailed out of it. And then looked into what we could do, because I still felt, but we all felt, it was the right thing as a holiday. It was different. So, and
at that point, skiing, it was just the standard conventional skis, nothing different because of your injury, or was there any, did you wear any supports or harnesses to assist you?
No, totally the most stupid thing I could ever do. I literally threw myself down that mountainside. So, no, it was, there was nothing, there was no, yeah, we just... Yeah, I kind of got a bit headstrong sometimes. So yes, I was one of those phases. And so we just went for it. And then went in and started doing some research and found out organisations in the UK, in particular called the Backup Trust. And again, they're there to help people with spinal injuries in particular, and how to, what they can do with their activities after spinal cord. And a lot of it would be different types of, you can do anything. You can basically do whatever you want to do out there. There is an adaptive sport available for you, no matter where you want to go to.
Mm. And interestingly, you shared a link to the backuptrust.org.uk, and I was looking at it this morning. And one of the, on their main, their landing page, the tagline says, every 4 hours, someone in the UK is permanently paralysed.
Yeah.
And like, when you look at that and break that down, that's phenomenal. I actually read it again and I went, geez, is that possible? Is that true? I mean, and I think like lots of people listening, and I know myself, family members and people I know who have, and again, of all different types of spinal cord injuries, and majority actually, it's the unseen symptoms, I think, and the unseen physiological effects that probably have the biggest impact on their lives. But that's staggering numbers. So we can pretty much assume something similar, maybe not every 4 hours, but something similar is happening in Ireland.
Absolutely. And again, going back to road accidents, maybe it's not as spinal injury may not be causing as many as there were in the past, but it is a large contributory factor. And when you go into the rehab and you see what the end of fact is, you hear about people who have lost their lives, and then you hear about people who have got severe life-changing illnesses, and they end up in the mater. I know what their life is going to be afterwards. And it is a very different aspect they are going to have to their lives and what they're going to deal with and cope with. But it is a tough one to do with. I suppose, again, we looked at how we could, again, do something as a family. And I went back down to skiing and to try that. And Anne booked me in to give me a ticket for Leeds Bradford Airport. I was a little bit shocked that this is where I was going to go and ski.
Probably not number one on your holiday list. Not for skiing.
No. Without doubt, it was not the number one place to go for me to go. But you end up there, you get a taxi afterwards. Thank God for Ryanair getting us there cheaply. And you go into this industrial estate where they have these large commercial buildings, and inside of it and outside there was people going around in ski outfits, and it's quite bizarre in the middle of May to see this happening. So went into it, and it's basically a giant snow fridge with a 150-metre dry slope on it with artificial snow. And it's got all the everything you would want for it to be able to try and do skiing. And they hire out all the gear, the jackets, the helmets, the suits, whatever you need. It's all there for to run with. So you can walk in with your shorts, change into your ski gear, and off you go for the day. And yeah, it made a huge impact on our lives as to where we were going to do and how we could make things work as a family.
And for things like adaptive skiing, then they can probably cater for different levels of spinal cord injury too, can they?
Yeah, and it's not even spinal cord. Like, you know, I've skied in different places and I've skied with people who are blind. And that's a most amazing sight to see someone coming down, someone behind them doing the clicks, and that's how they get themselves down the mountain. And then during the summertime, they have lots more activities that are based around mountain activities as well, whether it's canoeing, whether it's coming down on bikes, whether, you know, so it's not just that this is all about winter sports. There are summer sports that you can do as an adaptive region as well. But ultimately, yes, skiing for us was just one way for us to kind of settle into this is something that we'd like to do. On the adaptive skiing, you can have it where they tether the two skis together. You can then go into what they call a bi-ski, where it's got two skis underneath you. And then depending on your ability, for me, I'm lucky, I can go on a single ski. So you're strapped into a bucket type chair where you have no, you can't use your from the waist down. But a lot of people, remember, have spinal cord injury. So they have no sensation or no movement from the waist down. So it's all torso and arms that you're going to be using. And it's not that you have to have full ability within your arms, because if it's a bi-ski, you have two skis underneath the seat, and then you'll have somebody who's guiding you down the mountain and helping you in and out. So you don't have to have a great range of motion to be able to enjoy it.
And I got a beautiful part of your post, and there was a line in it that said, "For me, skiing is magical. It's the only time I get to be with my family on, in brackets, near equal terms. We sit on a chair, lift together, we go down the mountain together, and we laugh and enjoy time as we should."
Yeah.
Like, that's a powerful statement too. So this isn't by taking on and by doing the training in adaptive skiing, having the kit, you're actually on the normal slopes then. You're not put into a certain area, designated area. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It is beautiful because you're mingling with other people. You know, there is a buzz when you're then getting yourself off those chairlifts and your family's around you. And I know everybody, all members of the family, they're very aware of what is needed for to help me get in and get off the chairlifts. And, you know, I think they get a bit of a buzz out of it as well. And there's one of the things where the chairlift sits up and you have to hit it with your ski to get it down. So they all take their turns in trying to hit me and with this as well. So it brings a lot of fun into where we're going. And yeah, and they kind of look after me coming down those slopes and try not to push me too much. Just, you know, so yeah, it is a great fun thing to be able to do. It equalises all. We're all at the same level. Well, they're much better than I am now. So, but, you know, and can go faster. But yeah, it's good fun.
I think we can detect there's a competitive streak in you now. I doubt they're that far ahead of you now, in all fairness.
Yeah.
But again, and you've touched on it already, like, you know, there's other sports too, summer sports. You mentioned even horse riding. So really, lots of sports can be adapted. But one of the other key messages in your piece was, if you could go to an adaptive ski centre in Snow Zone in Leeds, in the middle of Yorkshire, why can't we do that in the Republic of Ireland?
I know, and it's always been there. And I suppose we were coming back from the last ski trip and I met a lady from the Backup Trust, and she was saying she skied all over America and Canada, and she said, what is there in Europe? So again, it was I kind of go, I know of X, Y, and Z in France or Austria where you can go to. And then I realised that the awareness of skiing, even adaptive skiing in Europe, is not that great. So I need to do something to try and highlight, A, there's an awareness there. B, can I help somebody? You know, even who's going through, family who are going through spinal cord injury, they're new to it, maybe I can help them in some other way. Again, trying to, why don't we have these facilities in Ireland? So in the UK, there's 10 such facilities. One of them, for example, is in Telford. And that's serving the population of the West Midlands, which is roughly about 4 million people. So it's not in Birmingham itself. They're all outside of the main city centre. So if we've got 10 of them in the UK serving a population of 65 million, it's about time we had one in Ireland.
That's what I'm just writing the same numbers here myself, like one would suffice.
One would suffice. And we have a beautiful, beautiful county here in Offaly. So, you know, we could really make it work. We have some rather tall buildings that are maybe made redundant or can have a dual purpose. But before I go there, in Holland, they have a place called Snow World. This is the largest indoor snow facility in the world, beating the likes of Dubai. There they have five slopes. One of them is 230 metres in length. They bring in 500,000 visitors a year into that facility. The company runs it. They have seven such facilities in Europe. They have turnover of 8 million and profit of 2. So it is a profitable type of a business. And in Denmark, the most exciting one is they have a place called Copenhill. Now, Copenhagen is just phenomenal. It's a waste energy plant on the outskirts of Copenhagen itself. What they did is they looked at, traditionally we would hide a building like this. So they looked at repurposing it.
I saw the designs of that a couple of years ago. It's phenomenal. It's typical Scandinavian.
Pretty typical of what you can do. Rather than wrapping, you know, an ordinary type of facade around it, you can build a ski slope.
Yeah.
They've kind of got a viewing deck atop of it. They have an apres bar at the bottom of it. They get 500,000 visitors a year. And out of that, there's only 60,000 skiers. So again, it shows that if we were able to do something like this into the Midlands, maybe look at the old briquette factory that's there outside of Burr. You know, it's got lots of facilities. It's got a good height. There's going to be some work done on it. But, you know, between Bordermona, the government, and there may be some local enterprises and whatever, this could actually happen. So, you know, maybe we can have, you know, Offaly World on our doorstep
if they can build a ski centre in Yorkshire, we can build one in the bog. That's fascinating. And again, typical with your business, the businessman in you is coming out as well. You're doing the numbers there. One centre to service a population of 6 million people, and the place in Holland, profit of 2 million euros and 8 million revenue that are turnover. That's phenomenal. So there's definitely a business case for it. And I mean, we sit at a time where on the business show last Tuesday evening, and Will Faulkner kind of continued the discussion, I had Mary Henze, the tourism activator for County Offaly, and they're acting like there's tourism activators in all the just transition counties, and they are shouting out for big ideas. I actually asked Mary, are the ideas you're getting in, are they going big enough? And she said, some are, but we need people to really, really think big, dream big. Think of the impossible. And she said, actually, go and look at what's happening across Europe. And you've just actually given us a brilliant case in point and example. And so this sounds like almost a no-brainer as well. So are you going to back it?
Well, I don't know about backing it, like to that those sort of levels. But I'm sure there's lots of people out there who would get involved in it. There is a lot of just transition funding available. Obviously we need to kind of do something to make it, you know, why can't we bring something like this into the Midlands, make it a destination area rather than people coming in for 1 day or 2 days or passing us by. That often happens. We've, you know, Burr Castle there, Loughborough, you know, Kinnity, they're coming in for 1 or 2 days. Make it that they're going to stay for 3 or 4 days, put money back into the economy, drive tourism up here. I think it would be a great idea.
And I think even it would increase international visitors to the area too. That I think that's almost a given. It sounds like a fascinating idea.
Wouldn't it be wonderful to think that we could have a ski destination in Ireland?
And again, if we just go back up to Longford Forest and think of what Centre Parks have developed, you know, people would have said there is no way that will ever be built or it could be as successful as it is, and it's a runaway success and a real eye-opener. I think if you visit Centre Parks and you drive in the gate into the forest, it is like you've gone somewhere else. You've left the country. And I can imagine you had a similar experience walking into that ski centre in Leeds. But Seamus, thank you so much for coming on, telling your story. You've definitely thrown the gauntlet down out there as well. And it'd be really interesting to see if people pick up on this, because, you know, sounds like it can work as well. And all the very best in your continued recovery. Thank you for telling your story. And I look forward to for sale. At least Aidan Barry has the jacket to go skiing in Offaly anyway.
Well, it's well worn at this stage. I don't know if any insulation left in it.
Right. You've insulted him enough now. Seamus Riley, thank you so
Take
much
care.
And thank talk you to you again soon. Time for a short break. After that, we're going to look at parking and traffic issues in Mullingar and Kinnegad.
Saturday View on Midlands 183 with thanks to Lumcloon Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumcloonEnergy.com.
I'm talking to Seamus there, has certainly got people's interest levels up as well. People saying, like, what a great idea, and certainly something that could be done, and what a fantastic thing. And loads of you, of course, have direct experience, or at least direct experience with a family member, a relative, or friend that is suffering from some form of a spinal cord injury or other physical injury or disability. That if there were more centres for adaptive sports, and bear in mind, Seamus was talking more or less specifically about skiing there, but that can be rolled out for pretty much any type of outdoor pursuit or sport. Really interesting conversation, and sounds like there's a lot of merit in it. Be interesting to see where it goes from there. We're going to come back onto actual and present local issues at the minute, and the issue of traffic through Mullingar town. And you're probably sick of hearing about smart traffic lights that are proving to be ultimately not overly smart. But this topic again was raised at the April meeting of in Mullingar for Westmead County Council, and sorry, the Municipal District of Mullingar, Kinnegad, by Councillor Ken Glynn. He's a Fianna Fáil councillor there. He said, in his opinion and in the opinion of the people he represents, and in the opinion of many business people and many people that he has spoken to, the traffic light system in its present form is not working, continues not to work, and continues to cause frustration and problems, not just for shoppers and for people trying to access services in the town, but for businesses too, because they're noticing a huge impact on their footfall. He's called for more action to be taken, and immediate action to be taken, and he joins me now. Very good morning, Ken.
Ronan, good morning. How are you?
Ken, can you just build on that and give us a sense of the frustration that's been felt in the town?
Well, I suppose, Ron, this is, I think, something like 7 years going on now at this stage. You know, the works were approved by the previous council, and all the councillors, you know, we listened to what the consultants, we listened to what was told, and put in an enhancement programme, which many towns around the country got. And the enhancement itself has been, you know, has done so much for the, so it's made the town look really well, the town centre, you know, it's very picturesque, and in fairness, it's added to the town. But the problem, Ronan, is that this infamous traffic light system, which is absolutely driving, I think, everybody mad at this stage. 2.5 years ago, I moved a motion which was on a second attempt, and at the second attempt, it was unanimously supported by all the councillors that we would reintroduce a roundabout at the corner of McDonald's. And in their wisdom, the executive of Westmeath County Council decided that they were going to have a traffic audit plan. And this audit plan, it's done under active travel. And as I have said on a number of occasions, it appears to me that some councillors and some of the executive want to see bikes in the town centre rather than cars. And to add to that then, I suppose, at last week's meeting, another solution which I've put forward is the reinstallation of the two slip roads off both Dominic Street and Castle Street in particular, because that's where the pinch point is. So there's so many issues, there's so much frustration on a daily basis. You know, often I'm told by the council that the issue is it's only at school times, it's only in the morning times. The day before the council meeting, it was a Sunday morning about 11 o'clock, and the traffic was right through the town. It was backed up, you know. So, like, I don't buy that. It's time for action, and they need to be talking to the business people individually. They need to go onto the shop floors. They need to talk to staff. They need to talk to the business owners and hear firsthand. I'm in retail myself, so I understand what footfall does. I understand how important it is to have customers coming into your shop and supporting your business.
What do you think the immediate effect is? Are people going to other places outside of a town, going to different towns, or just going to shop online if they can't get access to town centre businesses?
Well, that's one of the concerns. That would be one of the concerns. Look, Mullingar is we're very lucky because it's in my opinion, one of the best towns in the country. We've so many local businesses. We've so many local people providing a great service for customers, family businesses. And then we've a good mix with obviously some of the so-called big names. So, you know, there's a good mix in town, Ronan. People want to shop in the town. People want to come into Mullingar town. You know, our priority is our town centre and to keep the town vibrant. And I think, you know, there is that, you know, risk of slippage. If you know, people don't wake up. It's time to get this sorted. I think in this last council term, you know, I'm allowed to raise this issue twice a year under standing orders. I think I've raised it 8 times by form of motion. And we had, and don't forget, we had COVID in those times. So that's how long this is going on. People are fed up listening about us. But the reality is, every day, every week, people are contacting me about her saying, can you keep pushing this? Can you make this happen? Can you, you know, and just get the council to listen. So, like, the executive did tell me they're prepared to talk to businesses via the Chamber of Commerce. But as I reminded the Director of Service, they meet the Chamber of Commerce every month, which is very welcome. But there is businesses maybe that are not part of the Chamber of Commerce and don't have a voice and want to be spoken to individually. And that's what I'm asking the executive to do. Get out on the streets and talk to people. And at least then hear the issues firsthand.
Yeah, and you can absolutely agree and hear your point like that. This, it's not as if this is a new issue. Like, if I go back to October 22 in the Westmeath Examiner, and the headline was "Frustrated Businesses Considering Not Paying Rates Until Traffic Problems Solve." So here we
that's
go,
correct.
18 months later, and still no progress. But even things like filter lanes, and I think that's also an issue that has come up in many Midlands towns that have had some form of urban regeneration where there previously was slip roads. I know even in Tullamore, beside the Court Hotel, when there was road, a junction was done up there, the expectation was there was a slip road. It was kind of an unofficial slip road, would be retained. It's now gone. And this seems to be a thing. So when do you know what the official council response to that is? Is a town enhancement is the ultimate goal? Is it to slow down traffic, or is it to try and create ultimately car free town centres?
Look, when I've raised this issue, and I told the previous director, I think it was 2.5 years ago, stop talking about the town enhancement. I'm not raising the town enhancement. I'm talking about the traffic system, the traffic light system. And in my view, there is a diktat coming from, you know, from national government that they want, you know, to try and take traffic out of towns. They want to have more bikes in the town. They want to have, you know, park and ride. We don't have a public bus service in town. We have a fantastic taxi service, and we're so thankful for them for the service they provide. But we don't have a bus service. We may get one next year. We were told by the NTA at a meeting late last year that I think there's another town in the Midlands that's ahead of us, and that possibly in 2025. So come back to me when we have a public bus service and we have a proper public bus or public transport system that serves the town. But at this moment in time, people rely on their cars to get in and out of the town, to travel around, to get from A to B, to get into the town and support local businesses. So I think Westmeath County Council and the executive in particular, Rona, need to realise that you have to walk before you can run. And in this case, that realisation isn't there. They're not listening to the business people, and they need to start, because at the end of the day, they're the ratepayers, they're the people that they rely on. And also, they need to listen to the general public, who are the customers and the people that are coming in from the four corners of Westmeath to support all the businesses in Mullingar.
Absolutely. The last thing you want is a fully functioning public transport system to bring people into town, but unfortunately have no shops or cafes or restaurants for them to go to and to attend and to buy stuff in. That would be worst case scenario. But Ken, undoubtedly you're going to keep this issue highlighted.
Absolutely.
And keep us updated with any developments on that. Councillor Ken Glynn there from Mullingar, thank you so much for that this morning. Going from kind of traffic issues right over to parking issues, and I'm going to go to Kinnegad now, to Councillor Dennis Leonard. He's an independent member of Westmeath County Council, and he's been highlighting lately that Kinnegad is effectively becoming a car park for Dublin Airport. Very good morning, Dennis.
Hi, how are you today, Ron? How are things?
Good.
Listening to your conversation there with Ken Glynn, and it's all related to parking, transport, public transport, and we're only 12 miles from Mullingar, and we suffer similar issues with congestion. In our case, it's parking.
Yeah, and Kinnegad, I suppose, 10, 15 years ago when the motorway was opened, it would be probably been tipped as one of these towns that was going to be bypassed and nobody would in it. But there's been a lot of development there since, in fairness to it. But from a parking perspective, what are you noticing and what's causing the most concern there at present?
Well, there's an awful lot of commuters. I mean, an awful lot of people who park in the town go to the local businesses. And like Ken said there about Mullingar, you know, you want to support local business. You want people coming to the town, you know, for shopping, for their butcher, for, you know, for their basic needs and things like that. Because we're the third largest town in the county and you need a true put foot for the businesses happening on a daily basis. The problem has been is that there was very little on-street parking. A lot of people were using it to go to Dublin Airport, leave the car there maybe for the week. A lot of people were using it to go to work, whatever else. And then eventually a small car park was put in the middle of town. But the problem is there's only 50 or 60 spaces in it. It's a leased car park by the council, and we're opening, thankfully, you mentioned facilities, we're opening a brand new library, adult education centre, community centre in November of this year, and we're also opening a town park right on the other side of that car park, which will have, a skate park, playground, walkways, things like that. So Kinnegad is getting two large town centre amenities, and the only place to park is going to be that small car park. So it's going to spread out onto all types of different areas, the parking. So what we want is to keep that car park for the 115, which comes from Mullingar and Carlstown going through the town, and we want to keep it for the library and for the town park. But for people who might be getting airport buses and things like that, there is so much room out on the bypass there, and the buses can come in, slip in there, pick up people going, to the airport or whatever else, parking there for long term and actually moving off. And the NTA have agreed in principle to it. They've looked at it a few times, but the council seemed to be very, very slow. And the answer I got was that basically we're going to have a county-wide park and ride system. Yes, we need it. We need one on both sides of Mullingar for the new town bus. We need park and rides in various locations. But Kinnegad is 38 miles from Dublin, in between two motorways, and has a huge hinterland going over to Eden Derry, going back towards Trim, going out towards Caloocan and North West Meath, and in towards Mullingar. Massive hinterland of people who come here to get buses coming from Galway, from the west, and what's happening is they're parking in the parking spaces that normally would have been used for people, like I say, going to the butcher, going to the restaurants, going to the different pubs on the main street, going to the shopping areas and things like that. So we want to keep those spaces free to have the throughput of traffic, because Shop Local is a big theme right throughout this county. You don't want people driving 12 miles to Mullingar or indeed 40 miles to Dublin for something that they can get in Kinnegad. So we're trying to keep our town centre parking, for those type of activities, but also facilitate the many people who want to get a bus from here, because we're big believers in public transport.
Yeah, and again, even the amount of cars, it would potentially reduce the amount of journeys they're doing, reduce congestion on the way up to the airport as well. And then there is that economic benefit back into the community. You say people might then choose to pop into a supermarket there to do their shopping, right, or pop in for a coffee. So how quickly could this be turned around? How quickly do you think, if the council set up, took action, how soon could there be a proper park and ride facility?
It could be there in months. It's only a bit of, initially 804 and surface dressing and laying it out and access in, laneways in, out. The land is there, the whole lot. People have turned down car parks in no time. Next to Caloocan Station, there's parking for 100 cars, and there's a feasibility study done on that. And they reckon that car park could have been built in a few months once we get the station open. So these car parks are going to take, as you mentioned, we're going on the M4 on one of the most crowded motorways in the country. And we met Bus Éireann and Irish Rail and the NTA last December. It was at my suggestion, my motion that I got put forward. And a lot of people talked about carriages in Mullingar. They talked about parking. They talked about all types of issues. One of the main issues was that when you drive to Dublin on the M4, it's backed up. It used to be Lucan. You'd hear it on Morning Ireland in the morning. Then you hear Leixlip. Then it was Maynooth. And now it's Kilcock, that the traffic is backed up. So we have to push for a bus corridor from Kilcock in. But that's not the long-term answer. You'll have a bus corridor out to Kinnegad the way things are going.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is take a lot of those cars off the road by having park and ride, by having access to public transport. And when I first came to Kinnegad, there was a bus to regular bus to Galway every hour, the 20, bus to Castlebar, bus to Sligo, bus in every direction. All of them have been cut by Bus Éireann. It's now private operators. Now, the private operators, obviously, it's economically viable for them to run it. They're all making money. And yet Bus Éireann thought that they couldn't make money. So really, we need to get quality public transport. Public transport is a public service. It's not meant to be a major money-making operation. So really what we need is, we need a better car park here for commuters so they can take the public transport. We need a car park back the road there at Caloocan Station so they can take a train that should be stopping. There's stops there 8 or 10 times a day anyway. There's no reason why, people pull in. Anyone who takes the journey from Mullingar to Dublin.
Yeah. There's absolute merit for it. I suppose one thing, when it comes to laying a car park now, of course, we have to bring power there and put in all our EV chargers and stuff like that, which could add further complications. But a valid point as well, Dennis. Thank you so much for that this morning. And looking forward.
And could I just mention one other thing, Ronan? And that is, and this is a very important point, we all talk about public transport and getting from A to B. And Ken talked about it, Mullingar, businesses. On that bypass is also massive room for an enterprise centre. And I've been pushing for that for many, many years. We now have Minister for Enterprise in the Midlands. We have TDs who actually have a voice with government. And what we're saying is, on that bypass, there could be 8, 10, 12 companies, 38 miles from Dublin. And you know what? That would mean people could work close to home and wouldn't even need the car park because they could actually walk to work from places like Kinnegad or take the short journey in or come on public transport. We need more services for local people closer to where they live. And that's the way forward. That's what climate change is about. It's about keeping local services in local areas so people don't have to put all the emissions into the air making needless car journeys.
Well said. Thank you very much, Councillor Dennis Leonard, there, Westmeath County Council, and putting a valid point across there. But park and ride facilities in Kinnegad, one texter said about Mullingarda, should just admit they messed up. Returning Mount Street back to two-way traffic will help and put McDonald's Junction back the way it was, as Mullingar is dying. If you agree or you concur, you have a view on that, 083 3010 103, the Lamb Brothers text and WhatsApp line. Time now for a quick break. After that, cycling safety on our road.
Saturday View on Midlands 183, with thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com.
After speaking for about an hour in last week's show about road safety, I had to go to Naas then for a children's match. And on the way between Clunegown and Gieshill, or on the way between Gieshill and Clunegown, I met a van coming around the wrong side of the road, over a solid white line, around a bend, passing out a tractor. I blew the horn. He proceeded to stick his finger up at me. Now, that goes to show exactly, sometimes driver behaviour on a road is awful. And that van was probably a privately owned van, as opposed to, it wasn't a branded one, it wasn't belong to any of the commercial companies. But it kind of, again, just says me, proves case in point what we're speaking about last week. From a cyclist perspective, what's it like on a road? Is it more dangerous? Are people getting very hesitant to cycle, or are people seeing change out there? 8 cyclists died on our roads in 2023, 7 in 2022. And I'd like to be joined by Donna McArdle, the owner of Tullamore Cycle Centre. Donna, are people getting more fearful on the roads as cyclists?
Good morning, Ronan. Yeah, we get a lot of feedback, and we get a lot of people who are maybe just taking up cycling as a sport for the first time, and there is a fear, and it's certainly legitimate, their fear. And I know, because I'm a bike rider all my life, and I'm a motorist, and I'm a motorcyclist. So, you know, I see it from a very objective view, that I can look at it from both ends. For people who, I suppose the development of the greenways and the canal line and Boor and the greenways is fantastic, and there's a massive injection being put into that, which gives place for people to go to cycle safely. So that is a kind of covering your leisure cyclists who might want to bring their kids or whatever. From the kind of club rider point of view, which is for guys go on the road, and I'd be on the road probably 4 times a week in groups or on my own training or whatever, and there would be rarely a day that you don't have a close one.
Yeah. And that's
so
the,
you
that's
meet
the
a
point,
guy on a mobile
yeah.
phone, or somebody passing coming towards you on the wrong side of the road. And with cycling, unfortunately, the cyclist is always going to come out second best out of this. And there has been, as you've said, there's been multiple road deaths. And I was in Dublin a couple of weeks ago, and I just said to myself, as bad as it can be around here, how in the name of God can people cycle?
Don't know. Thanks
because
so much.
It's absolutely lunacy at its best. Really.
Donna, thanks a million for that. That just paints a picture and goes, that's a conversation I'm going to continue on Saturday View next week. Talk to you then.
Pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com. Midlands 103.